Welcome back to the podcast. This is season 2, episode 1. We are fully back. I'm joined once again by Rob.
Hello.
And we have got a heap of topics to discuss this week. We are going to be looking at some recent ad campaigns that we shot, although they're not that recent, but they've come out recently. We're going to be talking about the best used cameras for under £1,000, downgrading of my video gear, some networking we did up in Manchester recently, or I did anyway, Rob wasn't there, the latest Jaguar advert that has caused absolute uproar. We're going to be looking at some of your work for those watching this on YouTube. For those in podcast land, you're not going to be seeing that at all. It'll be cut from this lovely audio file for you. And we're then going to have a bit of a catch-up in general, I guess. So, Rob, what have you been up to in the many months since we've last podcasted?
It seems a long time ago, but only 5 minutes ago all at the same time.
Yes, well, there is that.
I've been busy doing some DP work in the independent movie scene. Working on a few projects, Master Holmes being one, which is a Sherlock Holmes fable.
Nice.
Also, Dead Bar, which is almost finished filming, which is the neurodivergent leaning movie we've been working on.
Super.
And also something for Equity, of all people, called Drown the Silence.
Ah, okay. And is it all, obviously, the stories, narratives and everything are very different, but in terms of the DP work, is it similar skill set for each job, or is it quite
different? Similar. I mean, the project scales, like Master Holmes is a very small, independently funded project. So there tends to be no more than sort of 3 to 4 people on set at any given time, with myself being one.
Yeah.
Where not only am I the DP, but I also seem to be the sound engineer and everything else going with it as well. Because that's how independent films get made, you know, yeah. That's the, like, wear many hats. Whereas the funded one from Equity was a large crew where we had like two sound people. I was a DP. I actually had an assistant, which is a rarity for me because I don't really know what to do with them when I get given one.
Yeah.
Because normally that's not within budget. So that we had someone else like flying one of the other cameras as well.
Super. And yeah, it's quite a technical job as well, isn't it? There's a lot of moving parts with video, especially when you're in charge of audio at the same time.
Yeah, which is like the worst thing, because with the best will in the world, it's difficult to focus on more than one thing at once. And you have to kind of, in a lot of cases, rely on the kit to kind of work for you.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing, you know, you're trying to, and I've had it, you know, the camera on the gimbal. You're framing the shot, you're focusing the shot, you're looking at the lighting, and you're trying to monitor audio all at the same time. And with the best will in the world, you have to divide your attention equally between those three things.
Yeah, I mean, this is similar to photography, isn't it? And you know, on a big video shoot, whenever we've had, which is rare that we get the big budgets for video work, but you literally have the DP, which is you. You then have the focus puller or the sharps person who literally focuses the camera for you. Then you've got the DIT who looks after the files and makes sure they all grade correctly and all the rest of it. Then you've got the lighting technician, the sparky, the assistant DP. Like, there's always people there to help you, because each thing requires 100% of your attention.
Yes.
And obviously you can do all of it yourself, but there will be mistakes because no one can do everything at once.
And especially with sound being 50% of the video. In actual fact, I'd argue sound is more important for the most part than the visuals, and you'll probably agree with this. If you're, say, viewing something on YouTube, something very pretty with awful audio is unwatchable.
No, absolutely. I can't tolerate
that. Something with average visuals, with really good audio, you sit and watch that all day long.
I think there's definitely... And it's not even that you have to have expensive microphones. It's like, just have the microphone close a lot, especially for YouTube stuff. Like, sometimes it's like at the back of the room and you can just hear somebody back here.
Yeah, when you've got the classic room boom.
Yeah, which is all of my early videos.
Internal mic, especially with something like these where you've got a fan rolling as well.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, the Blackmagic fans, it's not to be messed with. But we're back now podcasting. Very much thanks to this week's sponsor, which is MPB. Everything I buy is used.
Yeah, I mean, used is where the smart money is, like as with most things, because somebody's already taken the initial hit of the devaluation of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then things very quickly sort of found their plateau of their actual market value. And that's the smart time to go and buy one.
Yeah, you don't want to be buying it when it's brand new and it's got the hype price.
Yes,
like, I don't know, but... You know, each to their own. It's not for me. I like to save money so I can do more fun things. But yes, we have got MPB on as, you know, I mean, they're a great platform for used equipment. I've been using them since the platform didn't look like it does now, actually, so long ago, I bought my 5D Mark IIs from MTV.
Yeah, I mean, this is quite a sort of a nice fit and an organic kind of shoe-in for you, really, because, you know, you have been genuinely using their services now for years.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a lot of my money. They've over the years, they've done well by me. But yeah, so they're one of our sponsors. And of course, as you know, I'm quite funny with sponsors, and we don't take on sponsors that aren't right for the channel. So, you know, when MPB came along, it was a natural fit. I've been singing their praises on the YouTube channel for years, free of charge. And, you know, I use them. I use them for everything. They are great. And we'll go into more about that later in the video. Don't take up too much of your time now, because I want to talk about the recent ad campaigns we've shot. And the reason I'm saying the recent ad campaigns, I think we shot these before the start of summer. And I believe you're involved in both. One was the biscuit brand, which name escapes me now.
Yes, the one with the 20-odd shot gif at the end.
Yeah, that was a delight.
That was the one, yeah.
And the other was the Waffelmeister campaign with the stop motion, with splashes involved in stop motion.
Yep, I think that fed myself and my now ex-girlfriend for about 3 months with the leftovers from that particular shoot. Breakfasting was hard. Not one waffles.
Oh, I know. They're both very similar shoots, though. And this, the reason I want to talk about these is not to share the work with you, because I don't think that's of interest to people listening to this, but to share what it is that people are wanting at the moment, because it's definitely, you know, for these smaller jobs, I guess, I definitely count the smaller jobs. There's a certain thing they're wanting now, which is different to what they would have wanted a few years ago, which is great, because we don't want to be doing the same thing all of our lives. But both of these jobs, small jobs, we shot them months and months ago. And also, I don't know if people know this, but a lot of the times you shoot stuff, it didn't come out for ages. I often have nothing to share because I'm like, everything's embargoed.
Yeah.
Everything's, you know, it's not gone live. The campaign's been delayed. Sometimes the work never comes out. We've had that in a few jobs where we shot loads of stuff, somebody been paid for it, been paid for the usage, and they've just never used them, because since starting the shoot and it going live, they've had to change and adapt, because that's how the market is. So yeah, we shot these at the start of summer. I'd forgotten about them. I actually saw one of the adverts come up on my phone whilst I was scrolling through Instagram. And I was like, oh, that's my advert. This is cool. But yeah, so all of them were a mixture of stills and video. So it's one still shot with a video to replicate it. And these smaller campaigns, I can't talk about money on these because obviously you can see who they are and that breaches confidentiality, but these are not six-figure shoots, I guess is the way to put it. They're small, tight campaigns. And you know, they need to get as much out of it as possible to make it worth their while for the ROI. And they want portrait orientation, landscape orientation, 16:9, 4:3, you know, every which way possible, which is one of the reasons why we use a big high-res camera, because we can then get every way.
As you know, I'm fundamentally opposed to vertical filming. I mean, nothing grates my gears more than that.
I know.
So it's nice to have, you know, the high resolution cameras where you can take your 9:16 frame out in the middle of it for the Instagram and search and TikTok and what have you, without having to compromise on still having the wide shot correctly displayed on a computer screen.
Exactly.
I don't know, unless you turn that off on its side, you can't view a portrait video on your MacBook properly.
No, it's just a tiny little slim thing with loads of black bars at the side.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is not what we want. But yeah, I mean, all of these moving images shots, from what I remember, I might be wrong here, we shot on a stills camera. It was all stop motion. So it was like, let's take 10 to 20 frames and then stitch them.
Yep.
So we didn't even have to use video cameras. So we used the Fuji GFX. We used the Broncolor lighting. That was it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the size of that 20 frame GIF was incredibly large.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got the heart to tell you or not, but they're not using that. But that's never going to see the light of day. That was a lot of editing, which we could have not done. But there we go. It's you know, all of these briefs now for these mid-level jobs. So we're talking, you know, jobs where there is a usage fee involved, not really small jobs, but mid-level jobs, they want motion in there somehow.
You've probably seen that over the last few years, that being the thing now where it's almost expected there's some sort of video element, whether that's stop motion or, you know, slow-mo or moving picture, at least, is now a bolt-on to almost every shoot that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, it's been going that way for a long time. And we started off by initially, so the first few ones we did, which actually had moving image like video, we hired a DP and we hired the cameras in. Now, I mean, the Blackmagic 6K pretty much does anything in that realm.
I mean, if you consider, again, like where these things are going to land, for the most part, like I said, the smaller campaigns, not going to end up at your local Pearl and Dean at the cinema. They're
no,
going
exactly.
on TikTok, they're going on Instagram, they're going on Facebook, they're going on YouTube. And let's be honest, this is more than overkill for any of those use cases.
Yeah, I mean, even when we're delivering for moving image billboards, we deliver at 1080p because they can't play 4K.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, so we're shooting 6K, delivering 1080p, so it's like the ultimate in like downsizing of image quality, you know, which is interesting because it kind of brings me through to my next point, which is what we're doing earlier today, which we've not finished yet, but we were starting to set up a new YouTube rig. So for years, I've shot YouTube on this big Acam here, which is the 6K, and it's great, but it's manual focus and filming by yourself. And I have now built a manual wireless focus device thing, so I can now focus it with a little wheel. But it's the focus peaking is not as accurate as I thought it would be. And as soon as I move, so if I go and swing my chair back an inch, I'm out of focus again, which is not ideal for a lot of shots I'm doing. So I think using it's great for great image quality, but in terms of usability and actually nailing the shot, it's a bit of a nuisance.
I mean, as you know, I was a convert early on with the Blackmagic systems, but they very much rely on having a human behind it manning the thing at all times.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not a press and forget kind of camera.
No, definitely not. So I think what I'm going to be doing, like, we're still going to be using the Blackmagic 6Ks for the obviously shooting adverts because it's brilliant for that. It's like the best bang for buck. And it takes Canon EF lenses, which at the time were a good deal. But now, thanks to mirrorless, they're an absolute bargain.
Yes.
Like, they're so cheap, which is brilliant, I think. So we're using that for that. But I'm going to be trialing my YouTube channel for the next few weeks using the DJI Osmo Pocket.
Yeah, Pocket 3, I believe.
Pocket 3, yeah, which is what I shot my last vlog on. But we're going to go and make some audio presets and edit presets just to try and get the best outfit possible. After this, actually, after we film this, that's what we're doing next in our Sunday at the Tin House Studio.
I think the thing a lot of people don't appreciate is that, you know, this is our days off.
Yeah, yeah. Today is my day off. I had yesterday kind of off. I was moving furniture. So that's a day off, I think. But yeah, I just think I'm not convinced. I look at my highest viewed videos on YouTube and none of them were shot with anything but a 5D Mark II. So obviously image quality does not matter on YouTube.
No, much. And like I say, there's a point where you need something reasonable, but let's face it, every modern smartphone will shoot video to an acceptable standard for
exactly,
YouTube.
Exactly.
You know, so anyone thinking that you need, you know, 3 Blackmagics and all the toys, you generally don't.
No, if anything, it's sometimes it comes across too advert-like. So one of the reasons that I am, this is a bit of a segue here, changing my social media usage is because I shoot adverts. People don't want to look at adverts. So going forward next year, I mean, I've not really got any content to post at the moment because we're so snowed under with work, but next year, I'm not going to be posting my work on social media anymore. I'm going to be posting my behind the scenes. So it'll be behind the scenes videos and behind the scenes stills. There'll be the final image, like as you scroll through the carousel,
yeah.
But nobody wants to see the advert I've shot for Starbucks. Like, that's not interesting to people. They don't want to see adverts. They want to see
how you shot the advert,
you working. That's what's of interest to people, because you're just another advert in their feed, which is probably surrounded by actual adverts being paid for anyway. So you can be too professional.
Yeah, and I think it's always, I mean, you know, I'm obviously a nerd myself, but when you're looking at behind the scenes stuff, you're always looking, oh, that's what they did.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a little gem tucked away that's not really been spoken about.
No, I know.
That you kind of pick up on. You're like, yes, that's yeah, exactly,
I mean,
what I wanted.
We went through a phase of using, I don't know if people know about the lens light, but where you shoot a light into your lens while shooting the main set. So you have to have your camera locked off on a tripod because the angle needs to be perfect.
Yeah.
And you have one light like directly in front of your camera shooting straight back into it. And you just angle it so to control haze in the shot. And it's just, yeah, it's things like that. You don't pick up on those by watching polished YouTube videos. You need to sort of be on set and see what's going on set and all the rest of it. So yeah, downgrading the video gear and the audio gear a little bit, going from having like a proper is it an NTG shotgun I was using, really close boom.
Yeah, the NTG one.
Yeah, now to just lav mics.
Yeah, but you know, I'm a big fan of lav mics and have been. I mean, even dare I say it, I mean, like, because people think, and again, in the sort of in the film world, all you see behind the scenes stuff is, you know, some guy there with boom in the mic and all the rest of it. But what most people fail to realise is that that's literally only there to capture scratch audio.
Yep.
Because in most cases, they're doing the audio replacement in post, where the actor redo the lines and over and again, then they dub it all over and it's all seamless. But, you know, and then they've got the scratch track in their ears to get the timing and everything else kind of dialed into. Now, I think for most cases, a lav mic will give you a much, much better pickup, if not not better audio quality per se, but definitely in terms of like signal to noise ratio and the dialing out the ambient and having the vocals be clear. I don't think you're going to beat a lav mic for that in most cases.
No, see, my problem with the lav mic setup though is that it's the logistics of using it. So I have to have a shirt in the studio, which I leave here just for filming in, so I can attach a lav mic, because I only wear black T-shirts. And you can't clip the lav mic to the top of my black T-shirt because I have a beard. So all you hear is beard.
Russell, yeah.
Yeah, so that's frustrating. But we just bought the new Rode
Wireless Go 2
Wireless Pro. Go 2 Pros, and they are really good. I had the Wireless Go 2 before that. They were rubbish. Or we broke the receiver. The button broke, which apparently is a common thing. And the build quality was pretty pants.
Yeah, the Pro is definitely an upgrade in all sorts of ways, really. It's
comes with a charging case, comes with microphones, which again, accessories.
The first one didn't, comes with the microphones. And the microphones are really nice. They're like little flats. So
they're really
easy
nice
to stick to yourself. And, you know, you can, you know, use the surgical tape to tape onto people's chests and stuff. So, yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
I can't justify upgrading mine until one of mine breaks.
Well, this is it. I mean, I wouldn't have bought them had I not. I mean, it was a real urgent buy as well. It was a, oh my word, we need these now.
Because you've also got, for syncing with your new vlogging setup, the DJI mics as well.
Yes. So, yeah, into the DJI Osmo, there's like a D. And that, do you know what, in terms of usability is the word I'm looking for. That's brilliant, because you literally turn it on, it's just synced.
Yeah, you don't need to attach a receiver, there's no cable, it's just done.
And it comes with a magnet thing as well, so you can like magnet it to your T-shirt, which makes it good for me as well. But it's just, it's so useful, and it records 32-bit float.
Yep.
And it records the original audio within the DJI at the same time, and you can record it, like you backed up the Wahoozy. Which is grand, because when audio goes wrong, it doesn't go a little bit wrong.
It's catastrophic.
you don't go, oh, the audio capture wasn't great. It's either the audio capture didn't work or it did work. They're your two sort of, I guess, areas for that.
I know, I mean, it's been such a godsend over the last few years. And again, my first experience of that was the Wireless Go 2 Rode, like with the internal recording. Like, finally, especially recording something that matters, like a wedding.
Yeah.
And the speeches is like, you know, there's the one thing where you just cannot afford to have dropout or something wrong. And you're like, and you're there grinding your teeth. Like, God, I can hear it cutting out. It's like, why? And I can't do anything about it because you're in the middle of a ceremony and there's a priest and, you know, and all this sort of thing. But just having that knowledge that, right, I know it's all right. I can sync this later now. It's got an internal recording and it's solid. I'm good. I'm gravy with this.
Although we fell foul last week of the accidental mute button on the receiver, which we need to disable.
Yes, which we did catch, fortunately, but yes.
But yeah, that'd have been bad had we not have caught it. I've just pulled the, I've just fidgeted off the tab on my Pukka 3 Ginger Tea.
That's what Jamie Oliver would have sponsored.
Jesus, yes, there we go. And speaking of sponsors, hey, segue bonanza. yes, MPB is the platform which allows you to buy and sell your used camera gear. So, as I've already said, I'm a big fan of MPB, and they have a zero inbound waste to landfill, unlike other retailers, which I didn't realise till recently. I won't name names, but there we go. And they're using 50% of their electricity as renewable electricity, which is also great. What I didn't know, though, and they're probably annoyed at me for asking, I asked for loads of stats. I was like, I need some data from you. The average customer that sells kit to them gets £700. Which is more than I thought, which means people are selling larger volumes or higher value kits than I expected. I thought, like, whenever I trade stuff in, I'm always like, oh, it's just some bits I've got that I could do with losing.
Yeah, but right, so I think this, the amount of people, so all of this camera gear in the world is not marketed to professionals like yourself.
That's true.
That's completely true.
It's probably not phase one's going in, is it?
For example, you're still using 5D Mark IIs from way back when.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, that's true.
Because you tend to upgrade your stuff as and when it literally disintegrates and can no longer function. Now, the people upgrading, you know, normal stuff would be your enthusiast, your hobbyist, who always has better gear, newer, shinier than most professionals will ever have because it's their hobby. And of course, you spend money on your hobby. So they're trading in the 5D Mark IV because now the EOS is, you know, there's a new one and they don't want to be seen as having the older model now. And a lot of that goes with cars and a whole bunch of other stuff. But so they're trading in newer cameras because there's one newer one now. So
that's true. That makes sense. I mean, it's funny you should say that. I was on the phone to Hitesh Rao. Do you know Hits? Have you met Hits? Yeah. So Hits is the guy who taught me how to be a professional photographer pretty much. I was trying to get him to come onto the podcast, but he wants to sort his website and socials out first because he said it looks like he doesn't exist online otherwise. And I was like, fair enough. And he was like, oh, what are you shooting on at the moment? Is it still some like 30-year-old camera that you've just not bothered upgrading, held together with gaffer's tape? And I was like, no, I've got a newish camera actually. And before I was like, yeah, before that it was a 5D Mark II. Yeah. I mean, I've still got it and I do still use it to shoot stuff with. And he was like, why do you use such old kit all the time? I was like, because no one could tell the difference. Why would I waste money?
Yeah. I mean, you did upgrade to the DS and the DSR in the meantime, but
I did, yes, yeah. And only when they went down to reasonable prices of like, I mean, you can get those for like £800 now on MPB, which is a banger.
What's a camera for the money?
Speaking of which, what I went and did, because I'm a bit, I like shopping without intention of buying. I do it with cars. I was looking, we're going to speak about Jaguar later, but I was looking at Jaguars last night and whether I fancied, financially ruining myself and buying like a vintage Jaguar, nice little V8 engine and, you know, 8 miles per gallon, I'd imagine, on a good day on a motorway run. But no, so what I did last night whilst I was doing nothing was I jumped onto MPB's platform to look at some used kit, and I wanted to know what can I get for a grand today? Because I don't look at cameras often enough to know the current prices. So I've done 3 setups here, and I'll get this pop on the screen for those who are watching. But the first one is a Nikon or Nikon. What is the pronunciation?
Depends on which hemisphere you're in, I think.
Yeah, I think Nikon. Nikon just gives me the ick for some reason.
Yeah, it's...
Could you imagine dating a girl who said Nikon?
No.
No. And I bet all the people on the other side of the world are going, oh. But there we go. So here's the Nikon setup. Nikon D800, which is a 32 megapixel. This was the first high-resolution full-frame camera.
Yeah, it was like almost double what Canon were offering at the time.
Yeah, I think I went 5D Mark II or this. Or maybe 5D Mark III was that. But this was like, oh. And everyone's like, why would you need 32 megapixels? Yeah, who's laughing now?
D800 owners.
Yeah, it's quiet. Yeah. maybe this is relevant to the new Jaguar thing as well, actually, because this was ridiculed when it came out. But it's a great sensor, great studio work. But alongside this, so if I was still working, and I sort of did a bit of a who I would be buying this, if I was still a portrait photographer like I was back in the day, I'd want my 85, my 35. And you can get the Zeiss Distagon 35 1.4 and the Nikon 85 1.4 with this for, I mean, I went £82 over, but I think that's fair enough.
I think that's within margin of error.
Just over a grand. And with this here, today, you could shoot worldwide ad campaigns.
Oh, easily, yeah.
Like, for a grand. You can't buy a good new camera for a grand because you'll be ending up with some, like, enthusiast-level camera. Oh, that was some loud microphone noise. And the thing with enthusiast cameras is they miss key things that you don't realise you need until you need them, like a PC sync port. You need one of those because every now and again you're using a rig and a setup where your hot shoe is not the option. And it's little things like that, you know, like having dual card slots, I guess, is a big thing nowadays. I've never really bought into dual card slots.
But... No, I mean, the only thing I own that's got 2 card slots in, I guess, is the Blackmagic, but nobody uses them because you always shoot to an SSD. So again, single support.
I didn't even know they had card slots, but I assume the cards are expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, SSD it is.
Or too slow to write the data to.
Yeah, T5 SSDs. Yeah, so that's what you can get for a grand if I was a portrait photographer doing environmental work, headshots and all the rest of it. For grand, I'd be set up and good to go. And for £1,400, I'd have a backup body as well. Which, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at £324, is it? For the camera body?
Yeah, bargain.
It's nothing.
I know. It's
absolutely
nuts.
Nothing.
You know, I spend more on hard drives in a month. Now, this is one I was really proud of. So when I was a photographer starting out, and I've got a video coming out of this on YouTube actually about zooms and prime, so I won't go into too much detail, but I am a prime lens fanatic. And my first professional camera was the original 5D. The reason I had to stop using it was because it no longer tethered. It was something to do with the bit change in Windows computers. Or
yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
It just couldn't get it to connect.
So that was the end of that in terms of studio shooting. But I still used it as a portrait and a live music mm-hmm. camera right up until I stopped doing that sort of work. And I still shot some pretty big stuff. And I shot my first ever ad campaign on the 5D. It was for Premier Drums when we built the library in my
studio.
Yes,
I remember that, yeah.
Well, I lied to them and I said, yes, I've got a studio, and then quickly went and took a lease out on a building. Then had to get every photographer I know to give me, because I didn't even own a tripod or lights. I had to borrow everything. I mean, the shot turned out well considering.
I think you had like 11 lights on that shot, if I remember.
Yeah, but I had Paul Bonning Tyes as my assistant, and he basically did the shoot for me. I'm like, if I was there by myself, it wouldn't have worked. But here we go. So for under a grand, £964, you can get the 5D original, the 85 1.8, which is the lens I shot my entire portrait career on until my latest foray. The 50mm 1.4, which is what I also owned at the time. The 28mm 2.8, which is my favourite focal length for documentary work. You know, everyone's like, oh, 43 point something millimetres is the human vision. 28mm is the human field of view with both eyes open.
Yeah.
It might not be the compression, it might not be, but it's the field of view. 24mm 2.8, which is a banger of a lens, and the 20mm 2.8 gold ring, which is the lens I use for live music stuff. So when you look back through my old work, like when I shot the Trail of Dead crowd surfing through the cookie,
yeah,
that was on that lens. I think it was like 1600 ISO, because that was the most you could get, and like 30th of a second, and that's a banging shot. And again, under a grand.
It's a lot of kit for a grand.
I mean, obviously, you can't go and shoot the Olympics with this setup. That's not what this is for. This is for your documentary photographer. You sort of does a bit of everything. I mean, I'd get a second camera and go slightly over a grand, and I would probably sit with something like 24 on one, 85 on the other, or 28. I'd probably keep the 85 or 50 if I was in a tight space on one camera body and circle between the 20 to 28 on the other body. But I think, you know, you can't really say anything bad about that as a system. And then to finish things off, and I had a bit of fun with this one here because this has always been a dream of mine to own this. I looked at the Canon R5 Mark II. I didn't even know there was a Mark II, which costs around £4,000.
Yep.
I found it at really different prices, but in terms of places you could actually get it from, you can find it cheaper, but I don't think it's turning up.
No.
It was too cheap. It's about £4,000. You can buy a Hasselblad H4D40. Now everyone's gonna go, oh, they don't service those anymore, you can't get them repaired by Hasselblad. But nobody was sending them into Hasselblad anyway. You get them repaired by your local repair shop.
Yeah,
it's like
third parties.
I don't send my Zeiss lenses into Zeiss to get them repaired. I send them down, I think it's on of course I can't remember the name of the road now in London, Brick Lane repair shop. They'd repair anything, and they can find the parts for cameras which haven't been made for 50 years. They can definitely repair an H4D.
There's an amazing curry house down there as well. Why are you having any lens
service?
Yes,
exactly. I will say it's not a quick thing getting a lens repaired, because you've got to send it in, they've got to look at it, tell you what's wrong with it, give you an estimate, you know. But anyway, for a grand, and I say for a grand, you can just get another one. It's still a grand. But if you're spending £4,000, like, you should be able to get another one for a grand if you need to.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. I mean, the two setups you looked at earlier, when it's £1,000, like, there's you know, you've got a two-lens setup versus, what, a five-lens setup for the same sort of money.
Yeah.
Now, when you're into £4,000, and this is like the laws of all things, £5,000 isn't that much more of a stretch from four.
No, exactly.
But £4,000 is a big stretch from a grand.
Exactly. It's like when I bought my first camera for, like, I think, like, 5D Mark I, I got it when Jessops or Jacobs went bankrupt, and I got it for £400, and that was so much money. And I remember being like, oh, I don't know, this is a lot. And like, everyone was like, it's half the price it is anywhere else used. And I was like, oh, okay. I had a lot of buyer's remorse over that. Whereas, you know, a few years into your career, when you're like, oh, I need to go and buy three cameras quickly, let's go and dump a load of cash. That's a
very different figure of money at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, remember my first one was a 650D.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, but I bet it felt expensive when you bought it.
Oh, it's the most expensive thing I'd ever bought ever.
I think.
And then quickly ditched it and ended up with two 260s.
Yeah, which were
about a year or so later, yeah. I mean, it's the one thing I wish I'd have kind of kept that camera, but it did go to a much better home. So.
Oh, there we go. My 5D, I'm going to have a bit of a tangent here, is, I believe, lost somewhere at the flat. Because I gave it to them to see if they could repair it, and I forgot about it, and then they've moved location 3 times since then. So that's gone. But here we go. Hasselblad H4D40 CCD sensor. So we're talking skin tones beyond anything you could ever need. And then we've got the lenses. We've got the 120 f/4 Mark II macro lens, which is a beaut. The 82.8, which is kind of like your standard, but it's still, I mean, it makes any 50mm lens from a 35mm camera brand look like a kit lens. We've got the 100mm 2.2 portrait lens, which is beautiful, and the 50mm, which is kind of wide-ish for like environmental shots, group shots, 3.5 Mark II. I mean, this kit back in the day would have been 50, 60 grand at least.
I mean, obviously, as usual, Scott hasn't prepped me for any of this.
There's no warning as to what we're going to discuss or what I'm going to show you.
And I'm just looking at the prices and I'm thinking, that's about what a Sigma Art lens would cost. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, and again, what camera body do you buy for a grand? New?
Nothing
that it even stepped close to that.
No, and I mean, I would say that, I mean, I've shot with this camera. It is better image quality than the R5. Because I've shot with that as well. This is nicer. It's not as digital because it's CCD. It's not as clean. Obviously, the ISO sucks. But, you need flash.
But then, like, that's always been your case. I mean, I remember, like, I couldn't hand you speed lights fast enough at weddings and stuff that we've done before because you were melting them. They're on full power, absolute hammer. Rob, need another one.
Yeah, there's quite a few fires when we shoot weddings. But yeah, I mean, you just...
I mean, it's great prices for stuff, isn't it? Let's be honest.
That's, I know. I'm going to do this next time as well. I'm going to try and pull together some, like, here's what you could have had. I hope no one feels too bad about what they've just bought. But yeah, you know...
I'm not sure about your audience, but I mean, I think I'll end up with buyer's remorse by the end.
I know, yeah. But yeah, I mean, used kit is so good now. These, like, medium format used kit, I think, is where you make the big saving.
Yeah, because that stuff is expensive new, yo.
You're going from tens of thousands to thousands. And it's so much... If you shoot portraits, a bigger sensor is so important. You don't get the same look. I don't care what people say. Full frame on a portrait versus 6.45. The fact that people still shoot 6.7 film tells you all you need to know about sensor size.
Yeah.
Loads of fashion campaigns are still shot on the RZ 6.7. And it's because of the sensor size and because you can get closer with the bigger lens.
Yep.
And you get a more 3D look. It's just more beautiful. You can't fake it. You could do the Bresnan effect, but it doesn't actually work in the real world. So, but there we go. Now, we've got a couple of topics left, and I want to talk about some networking I did up in Manchester recently because I met a lot of people there who watch this channel, which I didn't realise because it was a proper... professional photography shindig rather than a YouTube photography shindig.
Yes.
I expect to, if I go to like the camera show, I expect to bump into people who might be like, oh, I watch your channel. But this was like, you know, award-winning photographers with their print books out and all the rest of it. So it was really nice to meet loads of people there. I drove all the way to Manchester in the snow in the Subaru, playing off-road games down the country lanes because the motorway apparently had a bit of a whoopsie on it. And I went there without my portfolio in print for the first time ever. So I've always taken a print portfolio. And this year I did a keynote presentation because you can't do PDFs with video in it. And I started with a video showreel and then went into stills. And obviously Karen helped me curate the stills and I made the video. I mean, it took me, what, an hour to make the video reel, I guess, because I know my footage. Mm. I know what's going to go where. And I took that down and nobody said a word about not having a print book. To be fair, normally when I hand out the print book, people are, oh, we love print. But no one said, oh, where's your print book?
Yeah, but I mean, let's face it, we are living in a very digital world now.
Yeah, and I just thought, I don't know if I'm ever going to have a print portfolio made again because as soon as it's made, it's out of date. And if you get one of the ones where you can like slide pages in and out of, they're not as nice. And I mean, print portfolio is what, £4,000 per book? And you need two of them really in case you have to leave one somewhere. So it's like £8,000 on printing. I mean, how many iPads can you buy for £8,000?
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously buy them all used. Because I get quite a lot of iPad for my money.
Even the most expensive ones, you know, I mean, you're knocking on, what, 1,500 quid or something?
Yeah. I was like, iPads are fine. I think I'm going to buy two of those larger sized iPads. Are they Airs or something like that?
Yeah, the Pro.
And the Pro?
Yeah.
I might get two of those. Still much less money than buying a book. And it doubles up on set. So we use one of my iPads for controlling the broncolor lighting because they're all Wi-Fi and it's easier. And we use the other one for Capture Pilot.
That's right, yeah.
For the client. And then we use another one for me to have Capture Pilot. And often my assistant, Paul, he brings his own iPad with him. He has Capture Pilot. So it's not even like it's just a portfolio. You know, you can use it for all of that. And then also when I'm in a hotel room before shoots, I watch Netflix on it.
Yeah.
Like it's the all-round winner, isn't it? So... yeah, I just thought I'd, you know, mention that because I was a bit nervous. I was driving down there. I was like, I've bought no print work with me. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's a bit daunting the first time you do it. Any big change in the way that you market is a bit of a, it's like, is it going to work? Isn't it going to work? Now, it wasn't a high risk scenario. It was going up to an agency in Manchester at Havas Links. Probably wasn't going to get any work. They predominantly work with like AstraZeneca and people like that. But you know, there's always some sort of like crossover. So I thought I'd give it a go and try it there. So yeah, next meeting I go to, there'll be no book, which is great because they weigh a ton as well.
And if you think, like, I mean, you know, people consider like general marketing these days, what is it? Website and social media.
Yeah.
All of it's digital.
Yeah.
So for people to be that sort of snobbery about the you know, oh, it's going to be printed. No, yes. I mean, you yourself do like buying like photographic books because they're lovely things to look at.
High quality ones, yeah.
But that's very much the exception, not the norm, I think, now.
I'd agree. Also, my work looks better backlit on an iPad than it does in print because of the way I shoot it and edit it.
Yeah, because of that kind of sort of almost holographic pop art style that you do have.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. I think that's going to be the future now for me. We'll see. I'll update people if it changes. But there we go. Now, this week, the Jaguar advert has caused absolute uproar. Now, I saw it before I knew about the commentary. I was like, I thought, and I was not looking at it at all from a car point of view. I was looking at it from a photography point of view. I was like, that's cool. That's a really cool advert. I liked the white strip of paint going across the perspex in front of the lens. Like, that's a nice shot because if you do anything too fancy in an advert, it detracts. So it's got to be clever but simple. I thought the styling was great. New logo, new Jaguar logo. I like it. I don't think it's Jaguar. I like the font. I'd use it.
Yeah, but there's been so many people that have tried that. I mean, do you remember when eBay changed their logo?
Yeah, that didn't work.
You know, and there's been so many of those over the years. It's so difficult when you kind of, that's your logo, which they've had for, you know, the last 80 years or whatever. Now all of a sudden you change it. Of course, people are like, hang on, ooh.
Yeah, people do not like change is what we've learned.
Yes.
But some companies, if they don't change, they go under. And I assume...
Well, as I say, I mean, Jaguar would get bought and sold every 2 or 3 years anyway.
Yes, yes. And the person in charge of this new ad campaign was the person who did the Land Rover Defender change, which also caused similar uproar. And this is quite a while ago now, but it's when they went from farm cars to now pretty cool gangster looking.
Yeah, but I mean, we've learned from Hollywood that every villain... is either in an Escalade or a Range Rover.
Yeah.
So, you know, Land Rover have got that gangster base.
They have. But I think this is one of those things where it's like, and I have the same on my YouTube channel, the people who shout the loudest aren't the majority often.
No.
I'll get people complaining about the audio or the lighting or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, that's one person out of 50,000 views. But you hear that one voice. Now, I read some of the comments and I was quite shocked at how people watch. I watched the advert and I was like, that's a cool video. Not thinking about it in any context of the advert at all. But what people read into it and the hatred and the vile, I mean, we'll just put it as it is, transphobia, racism, homophobia, which it sparked, I was quite shocked at. Like, I can understand people going, this is not Jaguar, but that wasn't the majority of the commentary. The majority of the commentary was...
Yeah, but you have to understand what's just happened across the pond.
Yeah, well, quite, yes. There's a
so...
I mean, it's a sensitive subject, I'm sure, for a lot of people, but in my world, it's not a sensitive subject. I just thought, cool video. And it's also a teaser advert. It's not the advert. This is like, here's a taste of what's coming. I mean,
that could have been for a toaster.
It's just, I think it's a beautifully shot video, and whoever did the creative was very good in it. Whether it's the right video for Jaguar, we won't know until, 5 years' time?
All you can say is that, we were discussing earlier, like Jaguar sells so few cars a year globally in comparison with... you think Jaguar is a fairly sort of mainstream car brand, but they're not. They're extremely niche.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to rack our brains of who we knew who drove Jaguars. And for me, the person I knew was Paul Bonning Tyres. The first time I met him, he was in a Jaguar smoking Marlboro Reds and it smelled of whiskey on the inside. Which I pretty much think is what people think of as a Jaguar driver.
Well, it's a Jag.
It's a white, middle to elder aged man, possibly smoking Marlboro Reds, probably drinking brandy and swishing it around on leather seats. So this, and obviously that clientele is not keeping the company afloat. So they're like, let's try a new audience and a new car and see if we can attract them. And that has obviously infuriated the old audience because they've gone, this is not us.
Yeah, but you bought one Jag 40 years ago. Yeah. Which is not keeping the company afloat.
So, I don't know. It's interesting. I also listened, and we listened to a bit of it together earlier, to Rory Sutherland's take on it.
Yes.
So, for those who don't know, any photographer listening to this should be listening to Rory Sutherland. Not as the authoritative voice in everything. It's all his opinion. But he was the creative leader at Ogilvy. And he is a brilliant mind in advertising, and he's like a giant in the industry. Now, what I didn't know was apparently he's massive on TikTok. I don't have TikTok because I can't be trusted, because when I installed it, I just doom scrolled for hours. I was like, oh my God, this has to go. But yeah, his takes on advertising are brilliant. And his take on this is quite interesting. He thinks it's a good advert, but, He was unsure whether it would be the right advert for them, and whether it's abandoned their heritage. And like we're saying, like with Rolls-Royce, these brands, they are heritage brands. Mm-hmm. Rolls-Royce has lost their heritage. Rolls-Royce is not driven by the posh, British rich families.
The aristocrats.
Well, they weren't even driven by them. They're being driven in them. Yes. Like, it's not that anymore. They're much more...
I remember somebody once saying, how does a Rolls-Royce drive? It doesn't matter if you own one, you're in the back seat.
Yeah, exactly. It's nowadays, they're like a car that you buy and drive yourself to say, I have lots of money. Whereas before, there were a car your driver had to drive you around it.
But you can literally buy one for 10 grand.
Yeah, no, but if you have to repair it.
Oh, yeah.
But there we go. I think it's interesting. I think, as photographers, we need to be aware of these things, of these changes, of these moves. And also, when you're on set, these conversations come up. And there's nothing worse than seeing a photographer just have no idea what's going on in the world and not understanding. The other thing is you need to understand both sides of the argument, because both are correct. And... what one side is saying is their truth and what the other side is saying is their truth. And you need to be able to understand both of these in order to work with a creative director on a campaign, which may be one side or the other. And you need to be able to understand the pros and cons of both sides and, be able to balance them out and say, well, look, these people feel abandoned by the brand and these new people feel welcomed by the brand.
And
where do we draw,
And dare I say, for a company like Jaguar, they've never been so much in the zeitgeist as they are now.
If
that was their goal, was just to put the name out there, absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, like this teaser video alone is probably the biggest marketing success Jaguar's ever had. It's same on YouTube. If I get loads of hate comments because people disagree with me, that's not a bad thing. Like people
drives that engagement up.
Yeah, it drives engagement up, and it means people are talking about the video. And I think people, a lot of people, all people, they want everybody to agree with their view of the world, which obviously is not the case.
No.
I think as somebody who presents on YouTube, you have to accept that my view on the world is not the only view in the world. And I'm quite happy with that. That's what makes life interesting. But, you know, people disliking my view is not, it doesn't upset me. It's just, you know, as part of the world. And I think it's the same with the Jaguar thing. Like, people not agreeing with their new advert. I mean, I think a lot of people have got very angry for something which doesn't affect them in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, but, I mean, people will get triggered over practically nothing.
Yeah, well, there is that. I mean, every time I mention Godox about start World War III, but, you know, there we go. So, that, you know, I mean, so going back to the point that Rory made, was that the car obsessives focus too much on car parts, and they're the minority of the customers. And the non-car obsessives, they focus more on style, brand identity, and whether, you know, when you're buying a car brand, for the majority of people who aren't car people, they go, does this brand align with my personality?
Yeah.
That is the fundamentals of marketing anything. It's like, who's the personality for this brand?
I mean, my brother, as you know, has been in the motor trade for the better part of 35 years now. And as you know, I've recently purchased a new vehicle.
Yep.
And I spoke to him, brother, I said, well, what's your, obviously, you buy a Honda petrol. Why would you buy anything else?
Yeah, yeah.
Because sensibly, yep, that's the correct move. It will never break. It will never cost you a penny.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you want to be sat in a spaceship? This is what you have to, you know, console yourself with, really.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and I think, yeah, you know, again, anyone working in this industry needs to understand how marketing works. You know, even down to my YouTube channel. Like, there is a key person I'm speaking to on a YouTube video. And I know exactly who my audience are on YouTube, and I don't make content for people who aren't that audience. And of course, people come onto the channel and get furious that I'm talking about doing major worldwide ad campaigns. And I'm not talking about how to treat the local restaurant. It's like, that's not what this is.
Yeah.
You're not the customer for the channel.
Again, that's understanding who your audience is, like, or at least the audience you want to grab.
Yeah.
And also then sort of understanding the tone of voice necessary to speak to that audience.
Exactly. And, you know, hopefully other people can work it out on their side, but apparently not always. But speaking of this, and people, you know, getting feedback from the wrong areas, I suppose, for those over on YouTube right now, we're about to review some of the community's work. For those in podcast land, this is going to cut out now, and we'll see you in a moment. I hope it's been of interest to you all there. That's some great insights from a young man with very strong opinions.
Yeah. I mean, you know, industry standard, I would say.
I'd say so. And I think everybody should have their work reviewed by children. And yes, it's funny to do this, but on a more serious note, when I'm making new YouTube content, I don't ask my friends who are my age, what should I be doing? I ask my children, what sort of videos are coming up on your homepage at the moment? What sort of things popular at the moment? What do you like watching? When I show them my photos, I listen to their feedback because it matters more than a photographer would be like, yeah, chromatic aberrations, oh, the highlights. Yeah. They'll be like, it's stupid. Why would you do that? Or like, oh, that's really cool. I like this more. Why don't you do this next?
Yeah. And it's one of those things like, you know, we hyper-focus on the technicalities of things. And then at the end, and this is something you've always said, but is it interesting?
Exactly, yeah. If it's not
you have
interesting.
To come back to that.
I mean, I think I cut most of this out of the Studio Access video, but my assistant on the shoot, Evie, yep, who's a brilliant photographer in her own right, she was telling me how my lights work. I got no idea. And I could go and fixate on that stuff for years,
yep,
and it won't make me a better photographer. But, I mean, she's a bit of a library of information on broncolor lighting. But, yeah, so going forward, we're going to be having some very special guests on this podcast. We've got some great ones lined up that you will all know and recognise. And I've also brought some people in from the industry that you probably don't even know exist, but they are important to listen to. We've got some really cool people coming in. Real industry leaders. I've gone and found the casting for the entire season, and I was quite shocked that everybody said yes, to be honest. So there we go. And again, another big thank you for MPB for sponsoring this episode. And we'll see you all next week.
Ciao for now.